everyone. My name's Mel Chang, and this is the She Dares podcast. She Dares is a community for women with daring mindsets to continuously break ourselves out of our comfort zones. This week on the show, we've got Beth Davies. She's one of my friends. I've known her about 10 years. We met through snowboarding, actually. She's one of the only people I know who essentially gave zero shits about what anyone else thought while she kind of pursued her wild life in her 20s. She's now working at WeWork, which are co-working spaces in Berlin. And we talk a lot about kind of looking back on the lessons that you learned through her life and through her work experience and the people she met, and especially when it came to funding her party life. Really excited to have her on the show. Let's get her on. Hey Beth, how's things going?
Hey Mel, very good, thank you. Yeah, life's slowly coming back here.
Yeah, are you managing to get out or?
Yeah, I actually went dancing for the first time last weekend, but it felt very, very strange and I couldn't really let go because, you know, it doesn't quite feel right just yet. You know, we haven't really beaten it yet, but I've had my first vaccination, so that makes me quite happy that I'm sort of one step closer to feeling a little bit more comfortable.
I'm absolutely dying for a dance. So actually there's a festival that I'm supposed to be going to in August and they're still going ahead, but it's not clear yet whether I can travel there or not. So let's see.
Okay, which one is it?
It's Defected in Croatia.
Oh, of course. Sorry, this is your tradition.
Yeah.
But what will they do without you?
I know. Let's see. Anyway, fingers crossed,
crossing everything.
So thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate you coming on. And as you know, we talk to every guest and we kind of deep dive into their lives a little bit and ask when there was a pivotal moment or a daring moment in your life.
I mean, there's kind of two, but I would kind of define them in the same category. And it's kind of decisions where I could like go forth and do season life, which was something which was very much an integral part of my 20s, an integral part of, I think, who I am these days. And that was, I got a job in a TV production company for game shows. They used to make the software for like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and all this. And having studied film at university, this was my first glimpse into that world. And I actually got offered a permanent job, but I had already planned to do seasons. And it literally was a very tough decision because, you know, other parties say my parents would have liked me to have taken the job and been sensible, but there was just a part of me that my heart didn't feel right about it and I wanted to do seasons. And that risk, I mean, it was an unknown as well. I didn't even have a job there. But so for me, that was a really pivotal moment because that was straight out of university. I could have gone a very different path.
Why did you want to do a season? And what do you mean by a season, just for the listeners?
Sorry. So for me, a season meant doing a winter season where I'd work in the mountains and wake up every day and be in the mountains and get to go snowboarding, because I grew up in Switzerland and for me, snowboarding was everything. That was my biggest passion, way I kind of defined myself when I was younger, I think. So yeah, for me, that was the dream. And I didn't even know what it was really at the time. So I wanted to do a season. I didn't know at the time.
Okay.
I just knew I wanted to be in the mountains.
I mean, that sounds like an epic way to live through your 20s. So why then did you actually decide to not take that job and to go and do the season?
I was quite, I would say, slightly selfish person at that time. I was early 20s. Any control of any decision I had, because, you know, you kind of live through, you know, school, university, everything was very expected of me from like family, from friends, I think also from general society as well, especially in England. It's very much like you go to school, you go to university, you get a job, you get a mortgage, you get married. And that's kind of the narrative. And for me, I think having not grown up really fully in England, and also because I missed the mountains so much, I had an aching in my heart. I was like, this doesn't feel for me. And the job was really nice. They really, like, the guy wanted me to do, he thought I could do very well. He was like, I can see you doing really well, a great project manager, maybe a producer later on. And sounded very good to me, but there was just something like my gut feeling, and I've kind of tended to follow that in many ways, which has been right or wrong. So I can't say that my gut's always right. But I decided to say no. And actually, it was before even the winter started. So I actually just then ended up going fucking off to Berlin for the summer, which is also another part of my sort of passion, is being in Berlin and enjoying the life here.
So once you were doing the season, what did that entail? And like, how did you live your life?
I mean, I think I got drunk in love with it, basically, because, you know, you're getting to snowboard every day, which is awesome. And, you know, you're partying every night. And for me, that was kind of, in terms of wants, that kind of had it all for me. And, you know, I didn't need to think about the future and I didn't need to think about other things. And that was kind of it was satisfying that sort of very small but easy needs, I guess, at the time.
How did you fund it?
This is the thing where I really, like, if you ask me about regret, this would be it, is that I started the first three seasons, I worked for a company who shall remain nameless or not, I don't know. And we were paid literally like peanuts. You got your accommodation, you got your like ski pass, and you know, whatever leftover food from the chalets was basically your food. So that's kind of how they excuse the £65 a week wage.
Wow.
Which is not really livable. And then I actually worked my way up the first three seasons. So I became a resort manager by the third season, and I was earning £100 a week and doing 80 hours a week. And if you actually calculate that, that was, and it was really like I was being overworked, and I had a sort of small burnout when I was 23. And that brought me to my second like real like, okay, I'm doing seasons, but I'm not doing them right. You know, I'm working for this English company there. No, I should be working for like the local or something. And then I ended up deciding to I was so unhappy, I quit my job for the first ever time, like quit it just because of being so unhappy. And, you know, seasonal job, quit it in like March. Didn't know what I was doing. Just thought, right, I'm going to find a job somewhere in Switzerland in the mountains there. Because also I had some debt because I had just been like putting money on my emergency credit card the whole time so I could live vicariously my life through myself without thinking of the consequences. And it really did catch up with me. I got, you know, I really like had to pay off a lot of my credit card when I eventually did get a job. But I really, it was very much a leap into the unknown.
Wow, that sounds incredibly rough. You said 80 hour weeks for £100.
It was really stupid. It was also, you know, if you think about it, it's like £1 an hour almost. I mean, and I think like if I look back on it now, like one of the things I really wish I'd known at the time was like self-worth. I did not know my worth. You know, you look back on these things and you're like, oh my God. And the thing is, I loved it. I still work in hospitality now because I love the feeling of togetherness you have with your co-workers, because you're going out, you're going to fight a war. You know, you've got to deal with all the clients. It's like in the bars I worked in, the restaurants I worked in, and now I run three offices. And, you know, you have a kind of sense of community there. And then we have that very much on seasons. I think I really love belonging to that.
You said that you studied, right? I think it was film?
If it was up to me entirely, it would have been film studies.
Okay.
Full honours, Bachelors of Arts. However, my parents had other ideas that this was, I think my mum's words were, this is a nebulous subject. You know, at the time, film was still like not seen as a, well, I don't know, in the sort of standard eyes, was not seen as a proper educational thing. So I did French with it as well. And that was because I had lost a lot of my French and wanted to get it back up to an adult level. So, and it also gave me the opportunity to have a year abroad in Chambéry, which meant I was right near every ski resort in France. you can see I had a bit of a one-track mind back in those days. Probably still do in some ways. What was really sad is that I got to university thinking, okay, at least I'm doing half what I want. You know, really, 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 yeah, what I really, really want sounds like the Spice Girls. I realised that it wouldn't, because it was a half honours, I wasn't allowed to do the practical film making. The whole point of me studying film was I wanted to learn how to make films. And unfortunately, they were like, no, sorry, if you're only doing a half honours, you can only do the theoretical side. And that was not really my jam, to be honest. So it was a bit of a shame, actually. I mean, it was probably me. I should have read more into it at the time. But yeah, that was a bit sad. But anyway, if I had gone there, maybe I would have ended up in the film industry. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, because that's kind of what I was going to say. You know, it's interesting how you went and you created your life around like the snow seasons and in hospitality. And you're now continuing to work in hospitality, even though I guess when you were like younger, you wanted to potentially pursue the film industry a lot more.
Oh, absolutely. I had my friend and I, when I was about 9, 10, we used to film in his basement a TV show called Kids with a Z. And we used to present, and we used to absolutely love like anything on camera, filming. I remember my parents bought me like one of my first books. I still have it at my parents. It's like The Making of Jurassic Park. Watching Jurassic Park made me want to be a director. And I was like obsessed with Steven Spielberg. And I just wanted to know how to make films and edit. And actually, what happened with seasons is I made a snowboard film every year. For every season I did, I made like a video of everyone, everything. And that gave me such pleasure. And I still make films sometimes, and of like travels with my girlfriend and stuff. And it's still very much there, the sort of, but I don't think, maybe I didn't have the talent anyway. So maybe a part of me knew that. And that's why I was like, just go snowboarding. It was the same thing as having the pipe dream of being a professional snowboarder, I guess. Never going to happen, but I can dream.
You mentioned that your parents were, yeah, not super thrilled about the whole season aspect, even though you kind of grew up in Switzerland. How did you cope with the opinions of others? Because I guess it wasn't just your parents. I don't know.
Yeah, it was also others. A lot of people were a bit like, oh, you're Peter Pan, you never want to grow up, you're doing this. And I think it's because, you know, there's very much a conforming idea, as I mentioned before, of like how one should be. And like for my parents as well, you know, they worked really hard and they gave me insane opportunities. Like I am an extremely privileged person. The more I reflect on it, the more I realize this. And also, I went through like a quite a tumultuous time in my brain because I felt like maybe me making these decisions that's not what they expect is me being ungrateful, because that would that beget that immediately. But actually, like now that I've grown up a bit more, it's not that I don't owe that to them at the same time, you know what I mean? They gave me the opportunity, but it's not something that, like, you know, they also want me to carve up my own path. You know, they had expectations, and actually I think they respect me very much more for maybe having taken my own path at the end of the day. Yeah. But at the time they very much had like an expectation, this is how it should go, like very old school, a little bit conservative, like, you know, they wanted the best for me. It wasn't that they wanted me to be exactly this, blah, 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 but it was just like they wanted the best and that's how they saw the best, so therefore that's where I should go.
Sure.
And to be fair, like the university decision, like I was never told I couldn't do film, which I was very much advised, like think about having something a bit more serious on your CV just to give you more chances. That was always how my dad kind of put it, like, and they did put pressure on, but they also gave me, they opened up the world to me, you know, like, you know, they never stopped me doing anything I wanted. And yes, we had like a tough time in my 20s because we would disagree on things and like how I was living my life. And, you know, obviously sometimes political things, never want to talk about that at the table and all these kind of things. But now we've kind of got a very much a mutual respect and understanding for each other. And I appreciate my parents more than ever now. I mean, but I had to grow up into that a little bit. I had to have I didn't really rebel in my teenagers. I think I did that more in my 20s. I was like, I'm going to do this. I don't care what you say. And in some points, I regret that because I missed out on some years of relationship with them, like proper ones. But at the same time, I wouldn't take it back because I think for me, I needed to do that. I needed to kind of break away from the mold that was being formed for me.
Yeah, totally. I had an interview not so long ago with another guest, and she was saying that quite often a lot of us think that we have this kind of set path, or we should have like this one thing that we're focusing on, this one dream, or this I should be a film director or whatever, you know, and then you study and then, as he says, then you get married and then you have a house, and it just never works like that. Throughout all the guests that we've talked about, it's all been through like either opportunities or just going with your gut, just kind of feeling the vibes and going, yeah, this is where I'm headed now. So thinking about, I don't know, the theme of She Dares, what were kind of your biggest fears during that time?
I mean, it was a thing I thrived off, but I also was absolutely terrified. I was a little bit the unknown. Like, you know, when I quit my job, when I decided to not take the film job, which was a safe income, was also obviously like, where's my next paycheck going to come from? Where am I also going to live? Because I was moving every 6 months after a season, moving usually back to Berlin. I'd have to find an apartment, a new job, and there was always this uncertainty, and it felt very like unstable. I really developed a little bit of anxiety about that at the time. Like every end of season or every big, like, I would always have to figure out where I was going to be and all this and that, I think, was my biggest fear. Also, like, was I making the right wrong decision? Should I have already gone back to England and found a proper job and not even about expectations of everyone, but also like done this so that I didn't have these worries, you know, because, you know, I had always had these worries. I always had to like really sort of quantify myself, like, okay, you're taking this decision, so this is on you. Like if you're going to, I had like, luckily, as I said, I come from a privileged position that if I was really in the absolute, like in trouble and I couldn't afford anything, I know that like my family could have like helped me, which I know some people are not in that position. And maybe that gave me a cushion to kind of leap off of a little bit more. And I really want to show that I really understand that. It's not that it's just, you know, not anyone can just do what they want and whatever, no consequences. And I think my parents would have probably not done it very easily, like, but if it was like a real matter of like seriousness, then of course, like, they would have like helped out. But they very much let me learn my lesson, especially my credit card. if anyone knows, don't do it. APR is like 27%. So yeah, you can imagine how much I was paying more than I'd actually spent, because I was always paying off the minimum. It was a complete, like, it was the stupidest thing I ever did. Never again. But I just didn't really fully understand it. And I think a part of me kind of blissfully didn't want to understand it. Does that make sense?
Totally. I can relate, because I think when I was 20, I had a permanent job. I was working in an office. And the credit card companies, they find out, they send you these letters. And it's like, available to spend. Like, here's your credit card. And it's like, available to spend 6,000. And
you're like, 6,500 I went up to.
Yeah. And it's not like, this is not your money alert, you know. It's like available to spend. So I'm like, great. Smash it out. And, you know, like within a few weeks, it's gone because I'm just not thinking about it. And then, 25, 30% interest. And I mean, I'm still actually paying off. I'm 40 years old now and I'm still paying off some debts wrapped up in a mortgage from when I was like 18, 19.
I think we kind of know, but we don't. And also like we choose to not know. And you know, when you're 20, consequences are very much a thing you don't need to really have on your mind. Because, you know, it's not just with money. It's with everything. It's with like, because everything's a bit transient. You're still learning, like you're still figuring stuff out. And also when it comes to consequences with health, for example, like you don't think about the fact that you party 7 days in a row for 3 months, you know, like you don't think like, maybe that's not good for my health. Maybe like sleeping more than a few hours might also be better. Maybe my future self will thank me for this now, you know, you don't think about it. You're just like, I think the thing with the 20s, which I miss, but also I don't miss, is that you're living in the moment. You're like, right, the moment is this. This is the only thing that matters right now. It's not like how I'll feel tomorrow, how my bank account will look tomorrow, or even in a week. It's like, I wanna make the best of this time now. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is for me, for example, I found in my 30s now, my best time now comes from comfort and stability, which is completely like the opposite to me in my 20s. And it's been such a turnaround. Like when I got my first houseplant, I was like, hell yeah, I have a houseplant I need to take care of. This means I'm stable. This means I have a permanent home. This means I can unpack my bags and I don't need to pack again for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to love that. It was kind of fun. It was exciting. Like, oh, I'm going to move all the time, blah, blah, blah. But after 7 years of doing that, I needed to kind of dare myself to maybe think, maybe you want stability. Maybe that actually might do better for everything. And then you can really enjoy life in a very different, more productive way, healthier way in every sense of the word. I mean, I think you've seen my evolution a little bit. I wouldn't call it an evolution. I don't think I've progressed that much, but
actually I do remember a specific time when I came to visit you. Was it Verbier? I think I came for a weekend and I was so tired. Like we had a great day snowboarding. I was so tired and you were trying to get me and my mate Suan to the club. And I was like, you know, I just need a bit of a sleep. Like, I'm really tired. And you were like, Mel, no one ever remembers when they had a really good night's sleep. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, actually. And you always kind of kept me youthful because you were like, this is it. Like, we're not going to see each other in this moment in Verbier
again. I was very much like this.
And then I think what followed was some Bomb Jaegers, which for anyone that doesn't know,
God,
is a whole glass of Jägermeister with a dash of Red Bull. Not the other way around.
Look at me, the little party philosopher back in the day.
I think I had two of those and then I hit the floor. But you did keep me quite youthful. It was fun. Going back to when you were talking about, you know, I mean, you were doing seasons for 7 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were living out of a bag, not knowing where you were going to sleep next. Is there anything now that kind of comes out in your daily life when you go away on holiday, when you're packing a bag?
Oh, I make lists. I know exactly what I have and I pack for every frigging eventuality. And I think this is my mum's thing, that I always pack like double the amount of underwear for what I need on holiday, but that's what I always did. I think it's quite funny because my girlfriend and I, when we go on holidays, our holidays are generally very hectic. Like every day we move somewhere else, we road trip, we travel. So we're like unpacking and packing. And I think I have a little trauma from it. So I said to her this year, I said, this year, can we please stay somewhere more than 3 days? Because I really don't like packing and unpacking. I think maybe I'm like, I like the unpacking and feeling like, okay, this will be my home for a little bit. You know, I will make this my home, even for 3 nights. It's going to feel comfortable and cozy and nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess because you had at least 6 months, you know, between packing up, it was never like every day.
And I also quite like that. Like, I lived in some terrible accommodation that, like, oh, God. But, you know, it was kind of part of the fun. I said, you're in the trenches with the team and with, like, the people you work with. I've made some of my best friends from doing seasons because it's actually a real sense of belonging and community in these places because you're all there for a common goal. I mean, yes, of course, some people don't go there to, like, ski or snowboard so much, but they go there because they like the atmosphere, the partying. I mean, the environment, you cannot beat the mountains. But for me, it was really like, oh, we have this thing in common. I mean, when I was in Verbier, like, I really enjoyed so much setting up, like, community. That I set up a group on Facebook called 11 o'clock Medran. Medran is the name of the, like, cable car. And so that people knew that there would always be someone there at 11 who's willing to go riding. And for me, that was like the absolute dream. I just like, I'd wake up, do the breakfast shift, then walk up there. And at 11, there'd be like maybe one person, maybe six. And that was actually like, I miss that. It was such a like, right, we're going to have an epic day. Even if it was terrible weather, like we'll just do two laps and then we'll grab a beer. Fine. It's just, it's a really nice feeling. And I really, really miss that. I see some of my friends still on seasons and it's still like, breaks my heart a little bit because I'm like, damn it, I still miss it. I really like, I would go back in a heartbeat. I've met a lot of people along the way. I mean, I remember one time being in Sisyphos in Berlin and I had some Australian friends who I knew through work here. And like one of them, like he went to add me on Facebook because we weren't friends. And he's like, Beth, you have 1,800 friends on Facebook. What's wrong with you? And I was like, well, I had school, university, and then I did 7 different seasons in 7 different areas, lived in Berlin for 7 different summers. And Facebook was a way of keeping in touch because I never had a phone number. I was always changing my phone number. And still to this day, the only reason I have Facebook is because of people that I wouldn't get in touch with otherwise.
Totally, totally.
It's not somewhere, it's not a place I spend time. I don't even like to browse there. I don't think it's a particularly productive place. I think the initial beginnings of it were and was nice. And also for me, I still have photos on there that I have nowhere else. So, you know, and I've realized, especially in the last year with Corona, I've become a very nostalgic person. So like my girlfriend gets driven insane because sometimes I just go into like a photo hole from like 2012 or something. Like, oh, this is such a good time. Oh my God, this drunken night.
If you could change anything about those times, would there be anything?
I think lessons learned earlier would have helped. So I would have liked to have learned my lesson with like the company where I worked for 3 years and was earning nothing, because actually as soon as I started doing seasons where I was working proper jobs in the mountains, I really felt like much more belonging part of it. It was more stable income. It was really like, I was really doing like, I just went for the easy non-risk option at first because I was like, oh, I'll be in a contract with an English company, so this is the safe thing, la la. But actually, I wish I had like been brave enough to jump ship earlier. You know, I spoke the language, especially with French and German. I spoke it a bit at the time. And I wish I had like had the guts to be like, no, why am I doing this? Like, why am I doing this for nothing? This is not my self-worth. I am working, you know, although I'm crazy and partying and everything, I can always say that I work extremely hard in no matter what I do. And for me, that I really regret that because I really like, I devalued myself and it had consequences on my finances. It had consequences on, you know, just general, like how I saw myself in terms of my work value, you know, so in whatever I was applying for. And I think that sort of delayed me being able to fund my seasons better. And I think I maybe would have stayed in the game a bit longer if I'd done that for a few more seasons, I guess.
All right, Beth, you know, as part of the show, everyone gets to give me a dare. Have you thought about one?
I have. I hope it's possible. No, for me, it's something a little bit me themed. I hope you'll appreciate it. Uh-huh. So I would like you to learn to master the basics of a new language in a week. Like some very basics. I want you to come back to me and say like, hi, my name is, how are you? Where is the discoteca? Something like this. You can choose the language.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to maybe do something with German because like you live in Austria.
I do.
But I thought you already have some basics there. So maybe something completely new, whether it's like, I don't know, Japanese, Spanish, French even. Whichever you want, but I thought it could be quite interesting because I mean, I grew up bilingual and I speak German now as well.
How many languages do you speak?
3.
I thought it was more than that.
Well, Spanish I can understand and I can read, but I've lost it since I learned German.
Beth's one of these people that she can actually speak about 5 languages, but she says she can't. She's like, oh yeah, only a little bit, and then she's completely fluent.
I mean, also Italian's quite easy to understand.
Yeah, see, there you go.
I had a challenge for myself in my 20s, and that was I wanted to learn to say thank you in as many languages as possible. At one point I had it in 17 languages and I can't remember half of them now. For example, randomly you can say Efkaristo is Greek. Or if you want to say it in Japanese, it's Arigato gozaimasu.
Okay, so how many things do I need to learn? Just some basics. Give an intro.
Yeah, this is why I didn't fully define it before because I wasn't sure like how possible it is. But like maybe like I'd like you to say your name, say where you come from. I'd like you to explain to me where the library is.
Yeah.
And I'd like you to order me 2 beers, please.
Okay. In a week, did you say?
In a week.
I better get to it. Yeah, just for the listeners, I've been pretty terrible with learning German. So I've been in a German-speaking country now for 9 years. I can understand, but my speaking, I just default to English because it's just easier. I've become that arrogant English speaker. This is definitely a push out of my comfort zone because I know I'm terrible, or I've been terrible at it. So thanks. That's a good dare. Thank you so much for being on the show. And
thank you for having me.
I will definitely see you soon in Berlin. When the clubs are open, I
hope so.
Let's go. No more, no bomb Jägers, but we'll go dancing.
Oh God, no, I haven't drunk Jägermeister in about 6 years. That tells you a lot about me as well right now.
Awesome. All right. See you later. Beth's challenge was to do some language, like learn some phrases. And first of all, I thought, you know, I could do it in like a European language, Spanish or something like that, and everyone would know. But then I thought, no, I give myself a real challenge, like maybe like Japanese, because I have a friend of mine, she speaks Japanese, and that would be cool to be able to converse a little bit with her. Yeah, I've got lots of options. I'm not sure what to go with first. Okay, so I think I've decided on learning Cantonese, so I can call my dad more often and have a good chat with him, hopefully in Cantonese and in English. Okay. That's hard. Break it down for me. Oi Yu Hong Ji. Long Chi.
Beijiao.
Oi Yu Long Chi Beijiao. And that's can I have a beer please? Or two beers?
Long Chi two.
Ah, Chi. Ah, yeah, Chi is two, yeah. Or Yu Long Chi Bi Zhao. Okay. Very good. Thanks, Dad. Should we practice again tomorrow?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? I'll try and memorize it. And then I'll come, and then I'll talk to you tomorrow about it.
Yeah, of course.
Le Ho Ma. This should be, hello, how are you? And Ho Kil Jo Melanie. That should be, my name is Melanie, I think. So I'm really happy with my progress, and it's definitely given my dad a focus. He's very excited about teaching me, so that's been really, really nice. This one is definitely the hardest, I think. Hai bin do to shi kun. There's a lot of, I don't know if it's the hardest, but it's like to remember the tone. I do have these things written down because it's really difficult. Like in my head, I kind of mix up like the Bi Zhao. I think that kind of goes on the Or Kil Jo, but that's not, that's my name actually. And Bi Zhao is beer. So my name is beer. That would be strange. Cantonese practice has been really, really good. My dad has been really, really excited about calling me and giving me the lessons. So I'm really, really happy with that. I'm surprised at how much I've memorized, and I think I can give Beth a call and I can reel out those statements to her. This has also given me a little bit of a kick up the bum to get more fluent in German, because I understand so much, and just speaking it, I've always just been a bit nervous about speaking it in front of people in case I get things wrong, but actually it doesn't matter. So this is my commitment to speak more German. You heard it first. If you want to check out how the dare went down, there's a reel on Instagram for every single one of them. Follow us at _shedares and let me know if you decide to do any of them with me. I'd love to see what you get up to.